Blog Talk Radio.
To be prejudicial, she'll be allowed to remain in the courtroom, and so we would respectfully request that the victim's parents be allowed to be remain in the courtroom. We would object to anybody else being in the courtroom that's going to potentially be a witness.
Familiar with the rule, Your Honor, however, this court judge had the discretion to allow other members of the defendant's family as well. And though the state has listed them as witnesses and may well intend to call them, they shouldn't, by that maneuver, be allowed to exclude the defendant's family from the courtroom.
Well, they they may come in after the state has finished with their case. Is there a reason why you feel that they need to be here in disregard of the rule of sequestration?
They are supporting their son in a second-degree murder charge and have the right to be here, both for their own purposes.
Show me a case that says that, please.
Not prepared right now because this wasn't addressed pre-trial, Your Honor. So I would like some time to do that. Maybe while opening statements are ongoing, we'll get that for you. To the extent that that's going to occur, you want them out at this point?
Yes.
Then Mr. Crump will also be in the courtroom?
Is he listed as a witness?
Yes, he is, Your Honor.
Yes, he will.
And any other witness you can identify.
Are there any other witnesses?
If that's the state's position, that this defendant's family should not be here.
Our position is we would just like the rule to be followed, and we've cited the rule.
Okay, and the rule says the victim's family, everybody else must leave the courtroom until further notice of the court.
No, Your Honor, he's a very substantive witness in this case, and they have full representation here with the mother and the father. Should not extend this to a substantive witness.
I would point out, Your Honor, that as the court is well aware, Mr. Crump has been the subject of many motions throughout the proceedings. He has been available. In fact, last week he was available. Defense made a decision not to depose him at this time for tactical reasons or whatever, but which they have the right to do. But if it was such an urgent matter, they made a decision not to depose him.
Not certain of the relevance of that argument to the 616 exclusion of a witness that the state seems to be, again, still moving to enforce. I would, again, suggest a relaxation of it, but if the state does not want to go there and wants to follow the letter of it, I think that we should. And I would note that 616 is in the alternative. Either the victim's family or legal representative, it does not say, and the intent of that is to allow for Mr. Martin's family to have representation, and they do. Mr. Crump, however, is going to be a very significant potential witness in this case. And if it's not going to be relaxed, it shouldn't be relaxed.
Okay, the rule specifically states in a criminal case, the victim of a crime, the victim's next of kin, the parent or guardian of a minor child, or a lawful representative of such person, unless upon motion the court determines such person's presence to be prejudicial. So the state is asking for the rule to be invoked, or you asked for the rule to be invoked. The state asks for the rule to be invoked, and they're asking that Trayvon Martin's family or parents be allowed to remain, which is provided for, and they're asking for Mr. Crump to remain under what portion?
Under that same statute, Your Honor.
A representative?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. He is the legal representative of Mr. Martin, the deceased.
And at this time, I don't have anything in this rule or any case law that says, of course, Mr. Zimmerman's family that's not on a witness list may sit throughout the trial. The issue is on the witness list. Yes, you might.
The 616 was never intended to suggest that the legal representative could be a substantive witness. The intent was to be certain that the victim's family under this statute is represented. They are well represented by mother and father. It was never an intention. I would think it would be an absurd intent, and I'm about to file an oral motion to clear this up, that a substantive witness in the case would be able to slide in under the suggestion of a legal representation. So let me say it this way. I hereby move orally that it is prejudicial to allow a The prejudice is that Mr. Crump has continually committed or had press conferences where he has evidenced a strong representation, not only legally, but factually. It was 25 minutes ago that Mr. Crump had a press conference where he said there are only two facts that matter in this case to the public. I won't recite them to the court in case you didn't see it, but he's very, very focused, suggesting his position factually, not just as a legal representative for this case. So as a factual witness, one, let's not forget, whom the Fifth District Court said is so substantive and has so few protections that we can take his deposition, is going to be a factual witness. He is a witness.
I don't recall them using the words that he's so substantive. I recall them saying, and I'm characterizing, that the deposition is extremely limited and should not take very long to accomplish.
Nonetheless, I don't want to argue with the point of what the Fifth District said. I understand your position. However, we have the right to depose him. That would, in my opinion, suggest that he is, in fact, a substantive witness if he was in a state.
When did the 50CA opinion come out that told you you had the right to depose him?
A month ago.
And yeah. You haven't deposed him yet.
And I think the court is well aware why.
Well,
if need be, I will tell you what I've done for the past 30 days getting ready for this case to try today. But the reality is the fact that we've decided to wait until this week to take his deposition does not suggest that he's less than substantive, does not suggest that he's a legal representative that should slide under 9616 when the family is otherwise fully represented.
The court made note last week when you had brought up about the depots that Mr. Crump had sat in this court room the entire time of jury selection, and that he was here and available, and you could have used the court reporter and this courtroom to accomplish that deposition any evening or at any time. So it was not his availability. But I don't want to get into that right now. I'm going to ask Mr. Crump and the defendant's family that are under subpoena to please leave the courtroom. We will get the case law over lunch, and the court will review the case law and make a final decision. I'd like to get on with closing arguments, and that's why I'm asking that to be done at this time. I don't know. I see that Mr. Crump is here. I don't know if there's any member of the Mr. Zimmerman's family that's here that's under subpoena. Okay, if they are. Please inform your witnesses that the rule of sequestration has been invoked. Anything else we need to take up before we bring the jury in to start with instructions? Yes, sir.
Just for the distance work file, for those who need to track the chemo during the petition on Saturday or the weekend, it simply relates to apparently there is a exhibit prepared by a witness who was provided for deposition on Saturday. That exhibit is, as far as I know, still yet unviewed. But if there's going to be no mention of it in opening statement, obviously the state is fine with deferring consideration of the motion for you. If there's going to be a mention of this, and it's specifically witness Shoemaker and a recreation, then I think we would prefer to have that addressed now.
Well, I just walked on the bench, and it's sitting up there. I have not looked at it. It has not been provided to me before now. Mr. O'Meara, were you intending to mention this in opening statement?
The animation itself, Your Honor, not specifically, but I will tell you that there is a demonstrative evidence aside from that, which the state has been provided, not the animation, but literally what we call a poster, which is a scene, you might call it a snapshot from the animation. So,
is there any objection to that demonstrative?
I would like to see it first.
We'll tell you which one it is. We sent them all 10, but I'll point out which one it is.
Could you please do so now, because we're getting ready to go into openings?
Pearls, hair bands, and now hot pink toes. Seems tough for a tough.
Jury room. What does she think really happened the night George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin? There's that, whether she thinks race played a role, and a lot more. Here's part one of our exclusive conversation. When you first sat down on the jury, when you first gathered together, what was it like? Did you know how big
this was? It was unreal. It was unreal. It was like something that, why would they want to pick me? You know? Why would I be picked over all these hundreds of people that they interviewed?
And when the trial started, what was the first day like? There were the opening statements. Don West told a joke. What did you think of that?
The joke was horrible. Nobody got it.
Knock, knock.
I didn't get it till later, and then I thought about it, and I'm like, I guess that could have been funny, but not in the context he told it.
Going into the trial, did you have an idea in your mind about what happened?
No, because I hadn't followed the trial at all. I mean, I'd heard of bits and pieces of what had happened and the names that were involved, but not any details.
So take me back, if you can, to that first day, the opening statements. What do you remember about them? What stood out to you?
Not a whole lot, because it seems like it's been years ago that it
really
happened. It does. It seems like it's been a very long time that we were there.
Was there a particular witness that stands out to you? Well, who did you find to be the most credible?
The doctor in SOP, and I don't know his name.
The doctor for that the defense called?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
What about him?
I thought he was awe-inspiring, the experiences he had had over in the war. And I just never thought of anybody that could recognize somebody's voice yelling in like a terrible terror voice when he was just previously a half hour ago playing cards with him.
Oh, this was the witness that the friend of George Zimmerman's who had military experience.
No, this was the defense.
Oh, this was the defense medical examiner.
Yeah.
Okay. What was it like day by day just being on that jury?
Day by day was interesting. There were more interesting things than others. When they got into the evidence, it was a lot more interesting than just testimony. Some of the witnesses were good. Some of them not so good.
Did you feel, a lot of the analysts who were watching the trial felt that the defense attorneys, Mark O'Mara, Don West, were able to turn prosecution witnesses to their advantage? Chris Serino, for instance, the lead investigator. Did he make an impression on you?
Chris Serino did. To me, he just was doing his job. He was doing his job the way he was doing his job, and he was going to tell the truth regardless of who asked him the questions.
So you found him to be credible?
I did. Very credible.
When he testified that he found George Zimmerman to be more or less an overall truthful, did that make an impression on you?
It did. It made a big impression on me.
Why?
Because he deals with this all the time. He deals with, you know, murder, robberies. He's in it all the time. And I think he has a knack to pick out who's lying and who's not lying.
The prosecution started off by saying that George Zimmerman was on top in the struggle. And then later on, they seemed to concede, well, perhaps Trayvon Martin was on top, but maybe was pulling away.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that the prosecution really had a firm idea of what actually happened?
I think they wanted to happen what they wanted to happen, to go to their side, for the prosecution, the state. There was a lot, you know, the witnesses that the defense had on, plus some of the prosecution witnesses, there was no doubt that they had seen what had happened. Some of it was taped, so they couldn't rebut any of that.
What was on the 911 tape?
Mm-hmm. 911 tapes and the John Good calling and all of that.
How significant were those 911 tapes to you?
The Lauer tape was the most significant because it went through before the struggle, during the struggle, the gunshot, and then after.
You had the parents of Trayvon Martin testifying. You had the family of George Zimmerman, friends of George Zimmerman testifying about whose voice it was in the 911 call.
Mm-hmm.
Whose voice do you think it was in the 911 call?
I think it was George Zimmerman's.
Did everybody on the jury agree with that?
All but probably one.
And what made you think it was George Zimmerman's voice?
Because of the evidence that he was the one that had gotten beaten.
So you think because he was the one who had had cuts, had abrasions. He was the one getting hit. He was the one calling for help.
Well, because the witnesses of John Good saw him, saw Trayvon on top of George, not necessarily hitting him because it was so dark he couldn't see, but he saw blows down towards George. And he could tell that it was George Zimmerman on the bottom. He didn't know who it was, but he knew what they were wearing.
The one, the juror who didn't think it was George Zimmerman's voice, who thought it was Trayvon Martin's voice on that call, do you know why they felt that way?
Well, she didn't think it was Trayvon. She just said she it could have been Trayvon's.
So she wasn't even sure?
No. She wanted to give everybody absolute out of being guilty.
But you were sure it was George Zimmerman's voice?
I was sure it was.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
Oh, brother.
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Hello, I'm Kay Thompson. And this is the Kay Thompson Live Show. And we have a dynamite show to be continued, you know, continued. Thanks for whatever beginning that was. But I'm telling you, I'm really annoyed. I'm very, very angry, as probably all of you are. We're going to be spending this time talking about the Trayvon Martin case. I don't have to tell you a lot about it. You've been seeing it, and I'd like to congratulate the people over there at CNN and HLN and all the other channels that have been covering this stupid, stupid murder. That's exactly what it is. Trayvon Martin, you know the case. He was a young man who was killed, murdered by Zimmerman because of the Stand Your Ground terrible legislation down there in Florida. And we're going to be talking to Eric Payne. We're going to be talking to who is the producer of the show and the producer of political segment that we have, political chair. I forget the name right now because I'm rushing. But also the political roundtable. Thank you, Shorta. Saved my life. We're also going to be talking to, trying to get to Gina Payne Scott. She's our correspondent for the Caribbean and a number of other things. So we're starting a whole lot of new things that I think is going to be very exciting. Craig Stanley, he is coming up the stairs even as we speak. He is with the NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology, and where he's going to be talking also, just flew in from California. Paris Davis, who is a producer, film, radio, music producer, who has something really interesting to say about the audio regarding the tape during the audio during this Trayvon Martin case. And he says that all you have to do is get someone who is an expert in audio, and they would be able to tell you exactly whose voice that was. And as we all think, it was because his mother said so, and that the voice that you heard on all the channels, that was the voice of the young Trayvon Martin. Also going to be talking to Congressman Donald Payne Jr. He has something to say about this. And waiting for Eric Payne to call in. So we have Eric, we have Donald, we have Paris, we have Craig, and we have Gina. And we are going to let you call in because we want to hear what you have to say, what you think. I know you've been having a lot of conversations all around the country. Thank goodness Al Sharpton is still around and alive and well, because of the fact that we are really going to have quite a movement. This stuff has got to stop. It has got to be changed. I remember way a long time ago, on WLIB, this was almost standard fare with the police department in New York. Okay, they were arresting people left and right for all kinds of minor things. I don't have to tell you about the Central Park Five. I don't have to tell you about Amadou Diallo. I don't have to tell you about what Tawana Brawley went through, et cetera, et cetera. A whole lot of things. So there are so many things that we have to talk about. Are there negative feelings? You better believe it. You know, it's very difficult to trust the police department. I'm going to tell you right now. Very difficult to trust them because of the fact that they don't seem to be able to, and I'm not saying all of them, but they don't seem to be able to be fair. They don't seem to be able to not put young blacks in jail at random. They don't seem to be able to be just in doling out, you know, sentences when people are incarcerated. We have so many African-American males, people, in the jails. Do you realize what big business it is? I mean, the business is so big. I mean, you know, it's high-tech business. They're building these jails, and who are they, putting in them? Now, I'm not saying that a lot of people shouldn't be in there, but not as many as there are, especially, you know, what happens with young black males and black males, period. If a crime is done or when a crime is done, why is it that whites who do the same crime never get the same punishment? You know, you always have, you know, the black people, us, getting more time than their counterparts. So you see, there's something really wrong with this. This is why people are out in the street. This is why people are marching. This is why people are angry. Are we angry here at the studio? Of course we're angry. You know, all people, all intelligent people are angry. Do I think that the prosecution did a good job? No, I don't. Why didn't they make a presentation that told the real story? Who did the crime? Who set up the crime? Who started it? The person who started this crime was Zimmerman. If he had not gotten out of that car, if he had just followed the directions of his counterparts, the police department, okay, and stayed in his car, Trayvon would be alive today. Okay? All right? So they told, you know, Trayvon, who was a wannabe cop, okay, he always wanted to shoot someone. He always wanted to get out a gun. He always wanted to, you know, have this in his belt or something. The man is sick. Absolutely sick, let me tell you. Anyway, it's not, I think I might have said Trayvon Zimmerman. Gosh, please. Thank you for correcting me there. Master Control, Shauna Glover. I'm talking about Zimmerman the killer. And when I talk about Trayvon Martin, he was the victim. The police department told Zimmerman to stay in his car. He didn't listen. He had his gun. He started the crime. He ended the crime. He murdered this young boy. Okay? Period. In and out. Now, I want to hear what you have to say about this. So very shortly, we're going to be talking, taking a break, and then we're Craig Stanley is on his way here in the studio, and we're going to be taking your calls and talking to you about this case. What are your feelings? If you go back to many of the cases that you are probably aware of, maybe you even forgot about several. You know, we cannot let this whole thing go. We cannot let this case be wrapped up without making noise about it. And it seems that people are so upset that that's exactly what's happening. I'm glad to see Eric Holder say that the government is going to be looking into it. So that's positive. It still doesn't bring back young Trayvon Martin, does it? No, definitely not. Anyway, everyone, the number for you to call is, shall we give out this number or are we going to be calling or do we have anybody calling in? The number for you to call, by the way, to get involved in this conversation is 323-679-0906. 323-679-0906. Want to hear your voices. Let us know if you are, angry. Yes, we are prepared to, you know, listen to hear what Gina, who's our correspondent, has to say. She's in Bermuda. We want to hear what people are thinking there. We want to hear what people are thinking all around the country. Once again, the number for you to call, everyone, is 323-679-0906. We are on. I'm Kay Thompson. This is Kay Thompson Live. If we had a first call, we're going to be waiting for them to come in. And by the way, another thing, you know, I'll tell you something else. Do you know, a lot of white people, this is not all white people, okay, but a lot, you know, they have a lot of difficulty, you know, putting black males in a certain category that doesn't even deal with reality. You know, as soon as you see a black person, some white people, if you've seen a black person, they immediately, there's a cloud, I think, that goes over their heads. Because this person automatically seems to become inferior to them. Why? That is so ridiculous. I don't know. That is really, really ridiculous. Okay. Also, when you think about black males being in jail, being incarcerated, there's a whole lot of things that happens with that. They're talking about poor communities. Well, you know, there's poverty in the poor communities. And it's done by, you know, I think it's done on purpose. Because if black males are jailed in mass numbers for crimes that whites are not, you know.
Hello.
Same amount of, incarceration or, you know, sentences.
Hi.
That causes destruction of black families and communities. Okay, so we're going to go to the first call. And the first call is, you're on the air. Gina. Gina, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Gina Payne Scott. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're fine. We're a little late in starting.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we hear you fine. I'm
getting a strange beep in my ear, but I'm glad I'm on finally because I have a lot of Facebook people who have been wondering if I actually made it through.
Okay. Now, I want to talk to you about Trayvon. What do you think? Is there a feeling about this in Bermuda, by the way? You're calling in from Bermuda.
Yes, I'm calling in from Bermuda. And, yeah, the case, it certainly has reached here, of course. I mean, Bermuda is, our television and radio come from Bermuda. We have three stations, come from the U.S. So we have three local stations and some local programming, but for the most part, it's international news. And, of course, the social media, Bermuda certainly is, you know, perfectly in tune to the world. And, yes, even to my surprise, though, I mean, everybody, literally everybody is talking about the Trayvon Martin.
Deeping noise, but I think we're going to deal with it now because I don't want to lose this call. Now, this is the Internet, so we're having a little problem. But anyway, go on, Gina. Hello? Okay. Can we call her? Yes, go ahead. You're on. Gina, you're on.
So, nonetheless, I'll just talk in case if you can hear me. But like I was saying, in Bermuda, everybody is up in arms about it. It's all over social media. People are talking about it here. It definitely has an effect here as well. The issue of black kids being profiled in Bermuda is not a big issue because Bermuda, of course, is 60-something percent black Bermudian. So you don't necessarily have racial profiling. You have the police force here is mixed with being Bermudian, Barbadian, and British, and I guess some Canadian. So it's sort of, a mixed bag. So you don't have the racial profiling, but you certainly have, the sense of a racial climate sometimes in terms of blacks being looked at differently and having some sort of, and unfortunately there is, a large segment of Bermuda's younger population, or even, I don't know, younger, older population that has some sort of a very heavy awareness of the color difference, almost an inferiority complex to some, I would say.
Wow.
Because of the history in Bermuda, which is much like the U.S. history, and it's younger. It's younger, so I guess what we have overcome in the U.S., Bermuda's overcome, but I find as an American anyway, that it is, still prevalent here. But I don't mean to say prevalent. It's not something you constantly are worrying about. Nonetheless, the Trayvon Martin case, obviously it's horrible, it's appalling, it's ridiculous. The thing that upsets me the most about it is that my sons are very tall. And just by the virtue of the fact that they are tall, and yes, they wear sweatshirts and hoodies and gym clothes and nice clothes and dress down clothes, has no bearing on whether they're a good kid or bad kid.
Yeah.
I'm lucky my kids are good kids. They've never been in a fight. They've never been in a fight at all. If they've been in a wrestling match at school or what have you, I don't know, but it's certainly nothing that's ever come home. Yes.
Hello. Did you have to have a discussion with them because they are black kids, black Bermudians? Okay. They spend a lot of time in the United States. How did you, what kind of discussion did you have with them? I mean, the guys are growing up.
No, I didn't. They're, you know, they're aware of the case, and so we've talked about it. We were just, like, appalled, you know, just shocked that, you know, when the verdict came in. I have had discussions with my kids about if there is ever an issue, especially in the United States, but also in Bermuda, anywhere, where there's the police involved, that you, even though in the end, in the first instance, second instance, you might be right in your innocence, that's not the place to deal with, on the scene is not the place to deal with an issue because of the fact that the police are in charge and you could very well get your, you know, get killed or abused or, you know, or worse. And unfortunately, you just have to basically submit, the best of your ability to the police and then deal with any injustice later because on the spot, you could lose your life.
Yeah.
You could be completely right.
Yeah. We have to take a break. Can you hold?
I can hold.
Okay, we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Kay Thompson, and this is Kay Thompson Live. And we're also being, we're talking to Gina Payne Scott from Bermuda. She's calling from Bermuda. And who's just come into the studio is Craig Stanley. And he is with the, what are you with? Speak in the microphone.
I'm with the Consortium for Pre-College Education at NJIT.
Okay, so we're going to get to you in just about a minute. Break. Craig Stanley, everyone. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Gina.
Hi, I'm Nina Markow. I'll be bringing up your purchase today. My associate, Shauna Glover, will bag your item.
Hey there.
Hey, nice to meet both of you. Let's see. Pork rinds, grape soda, genetically modified strawberries.
Yeah.
No me gusta.
Oh.
Okay, I don't want to offend you or anything, but none of this stuff is good for you.
It can't be that bad.
You're practically digging your grave with your teeth.
Yikes.
But don't worry, there are healthier choices that are just as delicious. You can try some dried kale instead of potato chips.
Or even actual grape juice in the place of the purple liquid cavities.
Right.
Also organic fruit instead of the GMOs.
You guys have some good ideas, but how do you know so much about good eating? Sean and I host the brand new talk show, Food Wrap, every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the GoPro Radio Network.
Yeah, it's the brand new radio show that's all about good eating. Nina and I will take you on a delicious journey through the latest trends and traditions in alternative eating from the everyday person's perspective.
Wait a minute, I heard about that show, Food Wrap, on the GoPro Radio Network, right?
Yes, it's the perfect weekly digest for anyone looking to beef up on food facts and share their own discoveries.
All right, that's it. I'm putting all this junk back, and I'm making better choices. And the first choice I'm making is to tune into Food Wrap every week from now on. That's every Saturday at 3 p.m. on the GoPro Radio Network.
At www.goproradio.com.
Where talk never tasted so good.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network. The fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Don't you just love that voice? Everybody's got a bald head, too. And he's gorgeous. That's Ty Washington. Oh, listen to that voice. Also, now we're going to turn to another voice, Craig Stanley. How are you?
Hi, Kay. I'm fine. Thanks for having me on.
For being here. Pre-college consortium or pre-consortium college? What are you the director of?
Right, I'm the director of the Consortium for Pre-College Education at NJIT.
Okay, at NJIT, that's New Jersey Institute of Technology.
That's right.
In the Center for Education in the state of New Jersey, downtown North.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Gina is still on, I think. Gina, are you on?
Hello, Assemblyman. How are you?
Why, hello, Gina. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, now that we have Craig on also, you know, how do you respond to Trayvon? Now, we can all talk together, so you can ask or talk to Craig also, Gina, you know?
Yeah, it was shocking, you know, and I happened to be with some very old friends in Sacramento at the time. I was in San Francisco on a conference, a Gear Up conference, and we all just dropped our jaws. We could not believe it. I mean, and these are very well off actual African Americans who actually grew up in New Jersey and went out and really made very well lives for themselves. And they were we were all and all in complete awe of this verdict.
Yeah.
It was a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And I still haven't gotten over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's undescribable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's between anger and rage and insult. There are so many emotions running through folks, and you can imagine, you know, how people are reacting. As I said, I was in San Francisco, so the news talked about what happened in Oakland. It talked about what happened in Los Angeles with respect to the some of the violence and some of the outrage.
And it's
hard to justify violence, but when you have this kind of a verdict, this kind of an outcome from a situation where a young man was just a boy, a kid, was just walking in his own neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and for this to happen, it almost justifies the response.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the thing that outrages me the most, is that this young boy, just because he was tall, I call my kids kids. They're my kids. They're boys. They can be tall. We can call them young men and all that, which I'm starting to have a problem with. They are in training to be young men, but they are teenagers. They are young boys. They are tall. That does not make them threatening just because they are, you know, they're physically, they've gotten their growth spurt. One of my sons is almost 6 feet tall, and I would hate to think that just because he is that tall and he's, you know, walking down the street, maybe even in Bermuda, it's called skylarking, which is wrestling with his brother. How they push each other into the bushes, or, you know, that looks aggressive to some people. That's scary. These are kids, and people really need to be careful about stereotyping tall kids because they're black. These are just kids. You want to get Skittles, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one thing we're also joined by or with, I don't know where in the world he has been, but he is here, and we are very glad. We're waiting to hear from Eric Payne. We're waiting to hear from Congressman Payne. We're also waiting to hear from Paris Davis. And we are joined with Wayne Gilman.
Good evening, Kay.
Good evening, former news director from WLIB-BLS. Where have you been all my life?
I tell you, I don't know. I'm just running around. Excuse my attire.
You gave us up there for a while.
No. Just busy, busy, busy. I tell you, I abandoned the teaching industry. You know, it's too much whiplash.
Yeah.
But we.
I heard that infamous voice of Wayne Gilman from
Gina.
Oh, really? Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, too.
Yes, good to hear you as well. I wish it was under better circumstances because, of course, obviously we're all up in arms about the Trayvon Martin case. And before you guys go on, I just wanted to also just point out, again, in Bermuda, it's number one topic for everybody. Again, we don't necessarily suffer from racial profiling in Bermuda, but, you know, with 60% of a black Bermudian population, Bermudians travel a lot. This is something everybody's concerned about. The topic is number one. Also, I know you're going to get to the Stevie Wonder issue, but also what I want to mention really quickly is that we're all up in arms. However, when you look into the courtroom and the letter of the law, they designed it so that the prosecution's arms were tied because the DA, I guess, or whoever the woman is who had that very bizarre press conference who just seemed so happy, you know, they deliberately had no, they had no intentions of winning this case. So the prosecution didn't have all the tools they possibly could have used. So according to the letter of the law, the prosecution lost the case.
Okay. That's true. Okay, Gina, thank you very much. Hang in there. Okay?
It's good to hear her voice.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah.
This, Gina's our correspondent,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to be, you know, doing the news from the island.
Great.
Okay, so we'll have that contact. Now, we also, as you know, have that congressional contact with Donald Payne Jr., with Congressman Donald Payne. We also have the contact with, what's your name, with Craig Stanley, who is the director of the College Consortium down at New Jersey Institute of Technology.
Oh, very good. All right? Yeah.
And Eric is going to be calling in very shortly, and he's in Washington and Maryland, and Paris is Davis, who is also a film producer, TV producer, music producer. And he says, now he's going to be calling in soon. I don't have to call you, Barry.
So you're covered, Kay. I drove all the way here for nothing.
Thank you. But really, yes, I'm very concerned about this.
Right.
And from now on, shows are going to move like this. We're giving everybody all kinds of information. You never can tell when the cops are going to come down and close us down or something like that.
Yeah, I tell you, just as a short thumbnail sketch, I was highly offended by what happened. I thought at least manslaughter, just for him to walk, you know. But I think in the long run, and I believe your daughter was alluding to this, Kay, that basically there's got to be some uniformity in the letter of the law throughout the country.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would be ashamed to say that I'm from Florida at this point. And I'm not surprised. And the thing is that the media has also played a role in this as well. I'm not talking about the free press or the liberal press for that matter, but the Fox Network and their coverage, their portrayal, and a lot of the
who talks
the
about Fox.
And somehow they still have a viewership to speak of. But the bottom line is, I just find it appalling, and I applaud what Stevie Wonder is doing.
Yeah.
The stand he took some 20 years ago.
And he stood up and he's being counted.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not over.
We have another caller on the line. Let's get that caller. Hello. Are you on? You're on the air. Hello. Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Yes. What's here?
Yeah. This is William Payne.
Yeah. Yes. Go on, please.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This is Bill Payne. Actually, I'm calling also as the rest of the nation is concerned about the decision, the not guilty verdict, the crime that was committed, the murder that was committed against a young Trayvon. And it's a conversation, though, that needs to be held by all folks, not just black folks, but every American who feels any sense of justice or that there was an injustice that was committed must be involved in this, because what has happened has an impact on every single person in this country, whether they were in favor of the verdict or not. No one can escape this, and therefore the conversation must be broadened, because what this is doing is giving us an opportunity to talk about the injustices of this system that we are living under, and also letting people realize that this is a system that impacts on everyone. And by that I mean that there are those in the inner cities and minority communities that are certainly occupying prisons in a much, much more unfair and disproportionate number. But the fact that the majority of those in the prisons are African-American or Hispanics also has an impact on the rest of the community. Why? Because the cost of keeping a person incarcerated unfairly is at least five times what it costs to educate a person. I've always said that we should make the investment on the front end. Why spend $50,000 or more a year to keep a young person in prison and spend maybe $15,000 a year to educate them?
Yeah.
Invest the money on the front end, and we can reduce the cost of keeping people in prison in the long run.
Okay, I want to go into more personal stuff, though, from both of you, the three of you, Craig, Wayne, Bill, Eric and Choppy, you're going to be calling in along with Paris also. What kind of message did you get from your elder or give to your daughter, your son, or somebody? What kind of message did you get in preparing them for this kind of thing? Okay? Sister, whoever.
To me, it's just a blatant example of what goes on in this society, regardless of who is the president of the United States today.
Yeah.
I happen to have a group of young Caribbean people who are working for me in my real estate business in terms of doing construction work and things of that sort. And there was a very heated discussion about that because and very, very often in some parts of the Caribbean, use that as a raw example of what I'm trying to say here, that there's been some institutionalized racism because of how many of the islands were colonized in the early days.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily a situation where it was black against white, but there's black against, you know, people of Indian descent, mm-hmm, you know, and other nationalities. But the thing that seemed to resonate with many of the workers who I spoke with, and a lot of them not here in this country long, it's regardless of what your racial background is, when you come to the United States and you're a person of color, you're black.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just seems to
hit
home.
And you fit a certain mold,
regardless of how, you know, there may be this confrontational issue between basically cultures in other societies.
Yeah.
Here it is so blatant. It's in your face, the
That's
white
right.
and black, you know,
confrontation. That's why people here react to this. You know, we're fed up with it.
Yeah, and they are, I have to applaud those progressive whites,
mm-hmm,
who stood up there,
yes,
throughout New York, Los, mm-hmm, Angeles, and
absolutely
other places.
And Mark.
And
yes,
protest,
always,
because
always.
You know, I would be ashamed.
Yeah.
And I can't think of the congressional figure who a couple of weeks ago held a news conference when the Voting Rights Act was coming up for renewal, and said that the South has changed, that there's no need. Can you imagine?
Please.
You know?
We have another call. Let me get to this call before you continue, Wayne. Hello, you're on the air. This is a 704 area code. You're on the air. Hello?
Yes. Hi, Kay. How are you?
Well, fine. How are you?
Good. This is Linda Jones calling here from Charlotte,
Hi,
North Carolina.
Jones, where are you calling from?
Jones, Charlotte, North Carolina.
I know.
Commonly known as Jonesy.
I know. Jonas, how are you doing? Not good to hear from your voice. That person laughing is Bill Payne, by the way.
Hello,
Mr. Jonesy.
Payne.
How are you?
Wayne Jones is here, friend of mine.
I'm well.
Frank Stanley is here.
The whole family's here.
Jeannie's on the phone. Yeah, we're all very angry, you know. But listen, we have to go for a break. Jonesy, I want you to stay with us. We do have to go for a break because you were in the military. Now she thought
24 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, she saw things from a different aspect even. So we're gonna get right back to you. So stay with us, everyone. We will be right back. Kay Thompson.
All right.
Kay Thompson Live.
The GoPro Radio Network is proud to present our newest show, Food Wrap, hosted by food enthusiast Nina Markal and Shauna Glover. Together, they will chew the cud, so to speak, and take you on a mouth-watering journey to whet your appetite. They'll spill the beans on the latest food trends, beef up on food facts, and share their own discoveries. They'll also have special guest experts and feature piping hot segments like Strange But Food and Chop It Up. So tune in on Saturday, June 1st at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the premiere of Food Wrap and get your food fix in. Why? Because, well, talk never tasted so good. That's Food Wrap only on the GoPro Radio Network at www.goproradio.com.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Okay, and we were listening to the voices in our heads ever since this thing started some months ago, you know, and I'm still very, very angry. I taught school, and I've seen what the kids go through, and I've seen how they've been treated by, the police departments in various areas. And the anger just stays with you. And you know, Wayne, when we were in L.I. booth, we're always marching about something.
Right,
and
right.
It just made you angry. I stayed in a state of anger the majority of the time, you know.
Well, you know, you figure after all this time, especially the years that we put in, in black radio, you thought this was behind us.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Amadou Diallo.
Right.
I remember Limerick Nelson, the Crown Heights situation.
That's right.
You know, the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing is, and I'm not saying it's right and wrong, you know, I mean, this was so clear cut.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I wasn't there. I have no empirical evidence.
But I want to get Jonesy in on this.
Certainly,
Linda Jones,
I mean,
calling from North Carolina or South Carolina, Jonesy?
North Carolina.
Okay, what's going on? What's the story down there?
Well, everyone here is a Republican state, but I can only speak from my point of view. My point of view first, I believe that the law itself is unequal. Because the law is not necessarily devised, and I don't feel it is devised for people, for minorities, especially blacks. We can tell by that, by the different the jail the jail systems, the number of blacks in the jails, not to mention I worked as a juvenile probation officer, and I also saw as many minorities in the juvenile courts and charged with some of them for very petty crimes. Mm. And as far as Trayvon Martin goes, I'm amazed that the prosecutor took 44 days before they even considered taking this to court, and the only reason he did that because of the outcry of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor, and I'm sure they did the best they could, but they could have done a better job.
But I don't know if they got away with, you know, just not even charging him, not even arresting him.
Exactly. And then I just think the law is unequal. What needs to be changed, especially with the stand your ground, the law needs to be changed because the law is not made, nor is it designed, I feel, in my opinion, I can't speak for everyone, to justifiable for minorities, especially blacks.
Right. I mean,
especially for blacks.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there's a need for uniformity, but, I mean, to me, it's just outright blatant racism. The cards are constantly stacked against you in a situation like that. And when the judge charged the jury, the directive was to come back in a uniform answer predicated on what that law was all about.
Yeah.
So what else did you expect?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I thought.
Exactly. And the law, and believe it or not, I know everyone's amazed and shocked about the outcome of the final outcome of the trial. However, I wasn't shocked because it happens all the time.
Yes, it does. That's the bottom line.
Bottom line, it happens all the time. So it's to me, it was no shock because I told my roommate, I said, they're going to acquit him. They are going to acquit him. And it's because you cannot, especially when the prosecutor did everything based on emotions, if you're looking at the letter of the law, and I think the jury itself, when the jury, it was not, I feel, a jury of, and it's really supposed to be a jury of the, I suppose, the
peers.
Defendants,
peers.
However, it was not equal. There was not one black person on that jury. Why?
Let me say this also.
You know one thing? What this does, too, is you have a sense of, not inferiority, but fright all the time. There's this feeling of being frightened that one of your daughters or one of your sons is going to be, you know, stopped by a police person, you know? And then also what it does is it demonizes young black males.
Absolutely.
You know? Completely. If they say it doesn't involve race or the death have anything to do with culture, they don't know what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
Oh, it certainly does.
White people, you know, they're insane. They have an insanity bell that goes off every now and then. Ding, time to go, you know, crazy for the minute.
One of the things I think we should say is that this is a conversation that must be broadened, not just to the black community, but as I said before, every right-thinking person that is appalled by the injustice here. It was mentioned earlier on your show that there were other people that also participated. We're disgusted with this outcome, people that of other backgrounds, et cetera. I think this is a conversation that has to be taken to the others as well. Those of us who happen to be in, like Craig Stanley, I think works for NJIT. I'm with the county. And we have to take this and put it in the face of those who don't look like us either. You know, we have to take it to them and say, this is your obligation, your responsibility too. It's not enough for us to talk among ourselves about this, but we have to let the rest of the community know that there's a price that they have to pay in many, many ways, either in taxes and others as well. And then there's also some people out there who are as appalled, I suppose, about this injustice as we are. But I think that we have to take it upon ourselves to take it beyond our community and get those people who are also angry about this injustice and take it to them as well. I had the opportunity to do that today.
Also another aspect of this, big jails. High-tech jail, more money for investors in jails.
Oh, absolutely.
And so who are the majority of people that you put in? Plus the fact that there is such a feeling of hate around this, hate for many white people. I feel it. Yeah,
sure.
Because we've got this time in and time and time and time again, and God knows if we could list the things that we have gone through with WLIBCO about these young black kids, the young males. I remember when, you know, my son Eric was going to school, I had to tell him, look, if a state trooper stops you on the highway, this is what you have to do. I resent that.
Oh, sure.
I resent having to do that, you know?
You know, Kay, we were talking about having a convention in September about the voting rights decision and galvanizing, galvanizing people to addressing that issue. Well, I think it's gotten to a broader conversation just about how we impact rights. Just general rights, human rights, of not just voting rights, but human rights, the right to walk down the street. So we have to have a greater conversation about this. And as Kate said, it has to be all-inclusive.
Yeah.
All people of goodwill have to be included in that conversation.
Well, it has to be.
And we have to.
Yeah. Obviously, have a role as well to play.
Eric Holder is on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Holder
is
on the ball, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Can he do something?
Well,
he's moving in that direction.
Something's got to give.
Okay. You know what? This has gone very fast. It's time to end the show.
Already?
Shauna Glover.
Already?
Thank you, Sophie, for going from North Carolina or South Carolina or wherever you are.
North Carolina.
Phil Payne calling in from wherever you are. Thank you, Wayne Gilbert, for walking in here, and he has on a T-shirt, everyone. but you came.
Yeah, I came.
And you still look gorgeous at hand.
Thank you very much. I apologize.
And thanks to Gina Payne Scott, she was calling in from Bermuda. And Craig, thank you.
Well, thank you.
You know, director of the consortium. Ooh, are you going to be running for office again?
I never say never. I expect it.
We need you.
Someday.
We need you. You've been doing a good job over there at the college in Newark. I'm telling people don't realize that Newark is on the money. There's so many things going on in Newark. Wait until that big, you know, game comes on, you know, comes into town. You know, well, they're the Meadowlands. People don't know what's happening in Newark. I'm telling you, gotta go. Shauna said cut it right now. We'll join you next Wednesday, everyone. Thank you for listening.